I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. There was trouble in the West Bank city of Hebron today. Hundreds of Israeli police stormed a disputed house and dragged out more than 250 Jewish settlers who were barricaded inside. Then things got ugly. The settlers threw rocks, eggs, and in at least one case, acid at the soldiers. Then they rioted in the town of Hebron, attacking Palestinian homes and cars. Injuries were reported on all sides. The BBC's James Stevenson is following the story. James, what prompted the police to carry out the evictions in the first place?
The evictions follow a court order by the Israeli courts. They ruled that the house had to be evacuated because there's a case going on about the ownership of the house. The ownership of the house is disputed, and the a Palestinian family in Hebron claim that they're the rightful owners and that the sale of the house to the settlers was actually fraudulent and shouldn't stand. Now, the Israeli courts have yet to rule on that substantive issue of who the house belongs to, but they did rule 2 weeks ago the house should be evacuated. And they gave a 3-day deadline for the settlers to leave voluntarily. Now, that deadline expired some 10 days ago, and it was in pursuit of that order that the Israeli forces, police and soldiers moved in today to evacuate the house concerned.
And it's been said that this confrontation has been brewing over this house for years. Why such a big issue over one house? What is this building?
Well, that's a very good question. You might wonder why there'd be so much controversy and tension over a single house. It's been occupied by settlers since March 2007. And the reason it's so contentious is that it's right in the heart of Hebron, which is a Palestinian city on the West Bank, one of the largest cities on the West Bank. And I'm sure you know there's a Jewish settlement in Hebron. Now, this house is a strategically important location on the route between that settlement and the religiously very important site of the Cave of the Patriarchs, a site which is holy both to Jews and to Muslims. And so the significance of this house is that it provides potentially a stepping stone, a strategic stepping stone for the settlers on a route to one of the places that makes them regard Hebron as such a holy city and one that's so important to them.
Finally, James, I mean, Hebron has been a flashpoint in the Arab-Israeli conflict for years. Remind us about Hebron and the settlement, the Jewish settlement there, what it actually looks like against the backdrop of the Palestinian town of Hebron.
Yes, it is a very peculiar place in an area that has many peculiarities about it. But Hebron is a Palestinian city, essentially, of well over 100,000 people. And in the center of that, there is a small Jewish settlement, and it makes the center of Hebron a very tense and constricted place, and so normal life is not really possible in the way that you might assume in the center of a large town or city. So it has been a difficult and tense place for that reason, because of this holy site, the Cave of the Patriarch. And so it's a highly fraught place, really, and this house has just become a flashpoint within a town which is in itself one of the most tense and difficult places within the West Bank.
The BBC's James Stevenson in Jerusalem. Thanks for speaking with us.
You're very welcome.
About 30 miles away in Gaza, Israel opened the border crossings for the first time in a week. That allowed some food and medicine to enter the densely populated strip. Israel also allowed foreign journalists to enter Gaza for the first time in more than a month. Linda Gradstein spent the day in Gaza and sent this report.
Umm Salim lives with her extended family of 50 people in a 3-story house in one of Gaza's refugee camps. They depend on food aid from the United Nations. For almost a month, there's been a shortage of cooking gas in Gaza. So she says she bakes 100 rounds of pita bread every day in an outdoor wood-burning oven. A pot of lentil soup sits on an electric hot plate, but today there's no electricity.
The situation's brought us 40 years back. Everything is getting very bad. We can't cook, we can't do anything. Now they've told us a rumor that if you want to fill your gas cylinder, it's 150 shekel.
That's 3 times what it used to cost. Salim was a vocal Hamas supporter who worked hard to persuade other women to vote for Hamas in the 2006 elections. But now she blames Hamas for the deteriorating economic situation.
Hamas, Hamas, it's all their fault. I'm sorry I voted for Hamas, and I'm not afraid.
Hamas staged a violent takeover of Gaza a year and a half ago. Since then, Gazans say Hamas has completely consolidated its hold over the Strip. In some respects, they say, life is easier under Hamas. Police keep Gaza's congested traffic moving, and crime has all but disappeared. But many say what they call the Israeli siege has made life unbearable. There are shortages of everything from milk to medicine. Even those who have money can't get to it. Gaza's banks closed down today, saying Israel is not allowing banknotes into the Strip. That means that some 77,000 Palestinian government employees won't get their salaries this month. The timing is especially bad because Monday starts the four-day Muslim feast Eid al-Adha. It's a time when Muslims typically buy new clothes and toys for the children. Salim says that won't happen in her family this year. Palestinian journalist Ahmed Abu Hamda says the situation is the worst it's ever been. His wife is 5 months pregnant with their first child. Last night, he says, he spent hours scouring Gaza City for medicine for her. In the past few months, the price of meat has doubled and fruit has tripled. Abu Hamda says he and many of his friends are depressed.
We are totally desperate, under very high depression. Everyone, when you go, when I go to, because I don't want to sit home, I don't have electricity.
The frustration extends to human rights workers as well. John Ging is director of the United Nations Relief and Works Association, UNRWA. He says the UN has been finding it harder to help people in Gaza. His organization, which provides food aid to 750,000 Palestinians here, was forced to suspend the program for 4 days last month after Israel tightened the closure. The UN's supply of flour, rice, sugar, and cooking oil is meant to cover 60% of Gazans' daily caloric needs. More and more, he says, Palestinians have no food to add to it.
We have a situation where people are simply living on what we're giving them. But unfortunately, it's getting worse. All that they're hearing at the political levels is spelling more doom, more gloom. And for them, they've lost any sense of there being red lines that can't be crossed.
But Ging says Israel's new policy of closing the border crossings every time a rocket is fired from Gaza is counterproductive.
We're very worried about radicalization. We're very worried about extremism. We're very worried that the stated purpose of all of these policies is the reverse is occurring on the ground in terms of the impact and consequences.
Back at Salim's house, she says she's not looking forward to the upcoming holiday. There's no money for the traditional cookies or presents. Even meat this year is beyond her means. For The World, I'm Linda Gradstein in Gaza.